and a very good Sunday morning out there to everyone. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Everyone, stop what you're doing. If you haven't yet, give your father a call. Go ahead. You can stop listening to the show for a few minutes. Give your pops a warm welcome. All right, tell him to tune in afterwards, but go wish him a happy Father's Day. Let him know you're thankful for him and all that he does. As we know, many of us wouldn't be in the situations we are without the guidance and support of our fathers out there, grandfathers, uncles, all your father figures. So be sure to let him know how thankful you are for him. Tell him you love him. And tell him that Vinny Fredericks from the Hot Seat sent you right here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. And a good morning to everybody out there. Thanks for tuning in. And we got a stellar lineup coming up today as we'll start the Hot Seat as we do every Sunday morning. Going around the baseball diamond, recapping the MLB games from your teams of interest, the Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox, anything else notable that's happened. Going to dive into the College World Series a little bit too, as we know that's going on in Omaha. That is must-see baseball, I will tell you that firsthand. And then later on, we'll dive into the NBA Finals as we have not yet crowned a champion. Dallas Mavericks still hanging in there. For now, will they make history? We'll have to wait and see. Game 5 coming up tomorrow night on ABC. We'll dive into the hottest headlines of the week, as we always do. And we'll open up the phone lines for you. If anyone's out there wants to call in, 518-476-1045, give us your hot take. And we'll react to it right here on the Hot Seat, as we do every week here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. And normally we'll start with the New York Yankees, but given that two of our local teams of interest, the Yankees and the Red Sox, have been playing each other the last couple nights, we'll get into that later. So we'll start things off with the New York Mets, who since last Sunday have been playing some pretty impressive baseball, if I do say so myself. Winners of 8 of their last 10, they've won 4 straight. Going back to last Sunday, we saw live while we were doing our show just last week, they were playing over in London in the morning, and they took down the arguably the best team in the National League, the Philadelphia Phillies, in what was a crazy outcome, winning that one 6-5. Then they come home, lose a game to the Marlins. All right, that happens. And since then, they have won 4 straight, beating the Marlins twice, beating the Padres in 2 straight games with a chance to sweep the Padres later on today, as that game will start at 1:40. So we'll dive into last night's game against the San Diego Padres, where J.D. Martinez, one of the newest acquisitions for the New York Mets, homered twice, and Jose Quintana ended a 10-start winless streak. So 10 straight games that Jose Quintana started, he was unable to get the win, finally ends that streak as the New York Mets take down the San Diego Padres 5-1. J.D. Martinez, like I said, 2 home runs. Very impressive from him. Brandon Nimmo knocked in a couple with RBI doubles in both the 4th and the 8th inning. And the Mets, winners of 4 straight. What are you going to do? I mean, this is what you like to see if you're a Mets fan. Now is the time that you want to turn things around. Listen, it's only June. There's still plenty of time before the trade deadline. And if the New York Mets can go on a little run here, get themselves in somewhat of a competing position for that, you know, that wild card spot in the NL, they surely probably won't win the division with the Philadelphia Phillies on an absolute tear this year. But if the New York Mets put themselves in a situation where they might have a shot at that second or third wild card spot in the National League, they might just go into this trade deadline as buyers instead of sellers, which a lot of people expected. You know, a guy like Pete Alonso, who's coming up on a contract year, not sure if he's going to re-sign with the Mets. He's going to be one of the more expensive rentals out there if a team were to decide to trade for him. Maybe the Mets decide to hold on to him for a year. If they have any sort of shot at making the playoffs and getting on a roll around October, you never know. They might just hold on to him. So later on today, the New York Mets and San Diego Padres will close up that series. Padres starring Dylan Cease on the mound, who's 6-5 on the season, 3.36 ERA. Mets starring Tyler McGill, who's 1-3 with a 3.16 ERA. And in other news for the New York Mets, starting pitcher Kodai Senga, who's been out since the start of the season with a right shoulder injury, pitched a 2-inning bullpen session on Saturday and is expected to throw another bullpen session before facing live hitters. So as the Mets are starting to turn things on, now's the perfect time for Kodai Senga to get healthy, get himself back in that rotation, and he could make a serious impact on this New York Mets team. Moving over here to the Boston Red Sox, who are taking on the New York Yankees tonight at 7 on ESPN. Since last Sunday, they have done exactly what the Red Sox have done all season. They've won a game, then lost, then won a couple, then lost one, then won another one. Because the Boston Red Sox this year simply cannot go more than two or three games above or below 500. They're going to finish the season 81-81. They might squeak into that third AL wildcard spot and maybe make the playoffs. But they're going to finish the season right around 500 because that is exactly what they have done all season long. They'll win a couple, lose a couple. They'll win one, lose one. So since they won last night, it's safe to say they're probably going to lose tonight and then win the next day. Or maybe they'll win again and then lose a couple. We'll have to see. But the Boston Red Sox got it done against the New York Yankees last night, winning that one 8-4 as Carlos Rodon finally has a bad start. You know, Yankee fans, they got a bit used to Carlos Rodon throwing some stinkers out there last season with a 6-something ERA. Not what anyone expected him to throw coming in to this season or last season with quite a big contract into New York. But he's really turned it around this year. Before last night, he had 7 straight starts that he got wins in, and he has looked a lot more just calm and holding his composure. He's not leaving the ball over the heart of the plate as much. Of course, I say this as that was his problem last night, as Rafael Devers had a 2-run double off of him, a couple other doubles in the first inning as the Red Sox got on top of him early, up 3-0 early on in the first, and the Yankees would try to climb their way back into it, and the Red Sox would increase the lead again. You know, DJ LeMahieu comes in, gets a 2-run single, scores 3-2. Next thing you know, Tyler O'Neill, Jamie Westbrook score again. Rafael Devers, like I said, had his 2-run double. And it seemed like every time the Yankees would get into it, the Red Sox would start to pull away. Juan Soto hits a solo home run. Next inning, Jarren Duran hits an RBI single. So it was a back-and-forth game here. You know, a bit closer than the 8-4 final score will show you. But at the end of the day, Red Sox get it done. And they have a chance to win this series against the New York Yankees should they capitalize and win again tonight at 7 o'clock on ESPN. But some good news for Yankee fans. Gerrit Cole threw 10 strikeouts just the other day in his latest rehab start down in Somerset at AAA. And he's feeling good. So we should get a decision within the next few days whether or not Gerrit Cole, the Yankees ace, will finally rejoin the Yankees rotation as he has missed almost all this season with an elbow injury, or if he'll make another rehab start. And you know, if you're the New York Yankees, why rush him? You know, give him that extra rehab start if that's what he's more comfortable with. There's no need at this point in time to rush Gerrit Cole back and risk him re-injuring that arm. You're already first in the league at 50-23, you're not in a position where you really need to win these games. So why even rush him back? We're starting to see them be a little more cautious with these injuries. You know, you see Juan Soto get hurt. He luckily avoided any serious time. He came back rather quickly, immediately started to make an impact again in the lineup. And then you'll see he'll get a rest day here and there. Aaron Judge will get a rest day here and there because those are the guys you just simply can't live with going down with injuries. It's baseball. Someone's going to get hurt along the way at some point, but you can't let your MVP caliber players get a serious injury. Not when this is the year to get it done. You know, you're going to lose some pieces at the end of the season. A guy like Alex Verdugo, who you brought in and has made a very big impact on this team, he's likely gone in the offseason because you simply don't have room for him. If you're going to re-sign Juan Soto, you already have him and Aaron Judge in the outfield. You throw in Giancarlo Stanton, who you're kind of stuck with. Jason Dominguez has been knocking the cover off the ball down in AAA, so you got to bring him up at some point. Eventually, Spencer Jones is going to make that climb to the major league level. And at some point, you're just going to run out of room for all these guys to play. Alex Verdugo just doesn't fit in that lineup anymore. So this is the year that you got to get it done. You know, you don't know what kind of lineup you're going to roll into next season with. You hope it's another good one like this year. You hope that they hold on to Juan Soto and they can still have those two MVP caliber players leading off the lineup. And you know what? The New York Yankees just got to get it done this year. You know, this is the best team that you've rolled out since maybe even 2009, the last time they won the World Series. So you really got to take advantage of the fact that this is your chance. You know, there's not many other teams in this league that have the star power to compete with the New York Yankees outside of the Phillies and the Dodgers. The Orioles are starting to creep their way up. But a lot of teams have started to regress. You look at a team like the Houston Astros, who has been World Series contenders for the last few years, and now all of a sudden, falling down. As I see, we got the phone lines ringing a little bit. Let's take a couple calls real quick before we go to a break, see what you guys want to talk about. Welcome, caller. Oh, look at that. We lost him. Let's try line two. Welcome, caller. You're joining the hot seat. Who am I speaking with?
Jimmy the Italian Stallion. I've been in studio. Vinny knows
Jimmy,
who I am.
Jimmy, of course I know you, Jimmy. How you doing, my friend?
What's up, buddy? Want to talk a little Yankees, and I'm dropping into the studio Friday to plan a little surprise for MJ, a little teasing.
Are you now? Okay. Well, I'm excited to see that. All right, what do you want to talk about with the Yankees?
About Gerrit Cole. I think they're not going to give him another rehab start. I think they're going to throw him in against the Orioles next week.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Thanks for the call, Jimmy. Talk soon, my man. Yeah, you know, Jimmy the Italian Stallion, very loyal listener. We love hearing from him. And I wouldn't be surprised if they bring Gerrit Cole back sooner than later. You know, the Orioles are one of the better teams in the American League. And that is a team that they lost the last time the series against the Orioles, last time they played them. And you're in Baltimore for this one. So you really want to take advantage of this series to kind of give yourself some confidence going into the eventual playoffs. Because if you go into the playoffs in a situation where you never even won a series against a team like the Orioles, then there's a little bit of, you know, not as much confidence there. You know, you're a little worried that maybe they can't get it done against the good teams. But we'll have to wait and see. Coming up tonight, as I mentioned, Yankees finishing off the series with the Red Sox. Winner of tonight's game wins the series. Yankees going to start Marcus Stroman, who has been phenomenal this season, much better than a lot of people expected, 6-2 on the year, 2.82 ERA. And the Red Sox will start Cutter Crawford, who is coming into this one 2-6 on the season with a 3.47 ERA. All right, coming up next, we'll dive into the College World Series a little bit, and we'll talk about the Dallas Mavericks, who have continued their season and live to play another day. We'll talk NBA Finals and College World Series coming up next here on The Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Hey, this is Vinny Fredericks from The Hot Seat letting you know that you can listen live well before these podcast episodes are posted. Join me live every Sunday morning from 11 a.m. until noon Eastern time where we can go back and forth on the hottest takes, hottest topics, and the hottest headlines across the world of sports. All you have to do, download the free 104.5 The Team app. That's 104.5 The Team. Download today for more of The Hot Seat live every Sunday morning. And we are back here on The Hot Seat with your host, Vinny Fredericks, as we are every Sunday morning from 11 to noon here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio and the free 104.5 The Team app. Thanks again to Jimmy the Italian Stallion for the call last segment. Always love getting the chance to talk to our listeners out there. Talk about your hot takes and get a little reaction to it, as that's what makes great radio. Right here on The Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team. All right, before we dive into the NBA Finals, I want to talk a little bit about the College Baseball World Series, because that is just must-watch sports. All right, I don't care if you're a baseball fan or not. This is where true excitement is. So we have officially entered the double elimination stage in Omaha. The stage is set, and there have been some incredible games so far. A lot of walk-offs, a lot of tight ones, and we'll start with this past Friday, when Florida State took on the number one seed Tennessee Volunteers in what was a bit of a controversial ending, as Florida State was up 11-9, bottom of the ninth inning. Tennessee, with a chance to walk it off, they get a man on base. Next guy up, Christian Moore, who happened to hit for the second cycle in College World Series history. So that's already a historic performance, but what does he do? Follows it up with a double, continues the inning. This is all with two outs, by the way. So now you got the tying run on second base, and up comes another Tennessee hitter who finds himself in a 2-2 count. So one strike away from Florida State winning and moving on to the next stage of the College World Series. And what happens? Well, Tennessee batter checks his swing. Although, when you look at it afterwards, the umpire called him safe, so it was ruled a ball. Count moves to 3-2. You look at the replay afterwards, and it's pretty clear as day that that hitter, he went around. And well, it doesn't matter. You know, you can't review it. It's all in the moment. And next thing you know, Burke, the first baseman who was up at bat, lines a single to center field, ties the game at 11. So now Florida State's in a situation where best thing they can do is just hope for extra innings. And well, that was not the case, as two at-bats later, Tennessee would drive in the walk-off run with a shot into left center field and win the game, which led to a lot of discourse on, you know, Twitter, Instagram, wherever, of people. Well, of course, your first instinct is going to be to blame the umpires for missing the call, because it should have been a strikeout. You know, at the end of the day, Burke went, wasn't able to check his swing fully, and it should have been strike three. Game should have been over, but mistakes happen. You know, no referee, no umpire is going to be perfect. They're going to make mistakes. And well, Tennessee didn't win the game just based off that. They only tied it up that at bat. So Florida State still had a chance to get one more out that inning. You know, you go into extras, you try to take the lead in the top half of one of those innings, and well, you try to hold them again and try to win the game. But that wasn't the case. Florida State crumbled after that, gave up four runs in just the bottom of the ninth, and end up losing the game. So as much as you want to say, you know, it was the umpire's fault and this and that, Florida State had every chance to still win that game despite letting Tennessee tie it up in the bottom half of the ninth. They just simply couldn't get that last out to get it done. So now Tennessee moves on. Florida State, one game away from elimination. They will play again today against the 12th-seeded Virginia. Virginia, who lost to North Carolina 3-2, also on Friday night. I know MJ is very excited about that, big North Carolina fan. Just yesterday, there's a couple more games, as Kentucky, in their first ever College World Series game, first time ever making the World Series, they walk it off with a solo home run against NC State in the 10th inning to win that one 5-4. And then later on last night, my Florida Gators, unfortunately, could not get it done against three-seeded Texas A&M, as they would fall 3-2 in that one. They had a chance in the top of the ninth, runner on base, an absolute shot to right center field, and an amazing play to rob the home run from that one, as Jace LaViolette makes a sensational catch in the top of the ninth, and that would do it. Texas A&M would go on to win that one 3-2. Florida unable to get back into that one. They started the game down 3-0, scored a couple runs in the later half of the game, but it wasn't enough, as they now face elimination should they lose another one. But coming up tonight on the College Baseball World Series spectrum, we have, as I mentioned, Virginia against Florida State. That's at 2 o'clock on ESPN and ESPN Plus. That's an elimination game. So that one's win or go home, you know, season on the line. And it doesn't get more exciting than that, especially two teams that were so close to winning their last games on Friday. And here they are with the chance at elimination. North Carolina will face Tennessee at 7 o'clock. This one, still not an elimination game. Neither team has lost so far. But this should be another great matchup, as we see two teams with almost 50 wins. Tennessee coming into this one 56-12. North Carolina 48-14 on the season. The one versus the four. This should be another great matchup. And coming up tomorrow, Florida and NC State in another elimination game. Win or go home. Both teams really losing in heartbreaking fashions. You know, Florida almost able to take the lead top of the ninth, robbed of a home run. NC State walked off on by Kentucky. So that's going to be a very exciting one tomorrow at 2, again, on ESPN and ESPN+. At 7 o'clock tomorrow, Texas A&M will take on Kentucky, and the winner of that will continue moving on in Omaha to the next round of the College World Series. So exciting stuff there. And we will move on to the NBA Finals. Another exciting matchup. Well, you like to think exciting, but the Celtics went up 3-0, and if history is any indication, 100% of the time, a team in the NBA that is up 3-0 in the playoffs goes on to win that series, whether it's in 4 or 7. A team that is up 3-0 has never lost before. Could this be the first? Game 4 might have been a bit of an inclination of whether or not it's possible, as Dallas completely decimated the Celtics as they were up almost the entire game. It was early on in the first quarter, about halfway through, when Derek Lively hit his first career three-pointer to give the Mavericks the lead. And like I said, this is in the first quarter in a tight game. Dallas was down 11-10. This isn't garbage time three-pointers or anything. This was Luka finding Derek Lively in the corner, unguarded, and he just decided to put one up, and miraculously it went in. So, can Dallas repeat this performance? I'm not sure. You know, Dallas did play great. Luka had 25 of his 29 points in just the first half. Kyrie Irving added 21 on a semi-efficient 10 of 18 shooting. And the Mavericks put on what was the third biggest margin of victory in an NBA Finals game. Only Chicago in 1998 and the Celtics in 2008 have ever beaten a team in the finals by more. So it was a great game from the Mavericks, you know, but it was also a very poor game from the Celtics. I mean, nobody on this Celtics team had more than 5 field goals made. Peyton Pritchard led the team in field goals made with 5. Jason Tatum only had 15. You know, Drew Holiday and Jaylen Brown only had 10. Sam Hauser was the Celtics' second leading scorer with 14 points. You know, that's just not the performance that you're used to seeing from this Celtics lineup. This could be a real outlier in the Boston Celtics season. A team that has looked so dominant throughout the entire regular season and the playoffs. They were winners of 10 straight games going into this. So it's one of those things where, yeah, Dallas, you know, they're surviving. You know, if they were to win tomorrow night in Boston, then, okay, maybe we can start having a discussion on whether or not this is possible. But until then, I'm not sold. You know, I still think that the Celtics are going to win this one rather easily, because you look at games 1, 2, and 3, Dallas had a couple chances. You know, game 2 especially, Dallas had a chance late in that one. They could have gotten up, and the Celtics have just been phenomenal at winning close games. You saw it in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers, where in almost every single game outside of game 2, the Pacers had a chance to win. You know, the Pacers were up late, and then the Celtics really lock in the fourth quarter, and they turn it on. And then next thing you know, Celtics end up sweeping the Pacers and move on to the finals. Same thing in the NBA Finals so far this year. You know, outside of game 1, games 2 and 3 were fairly close. You know, Mavericks definitely had a shot to win those games, and the Celtics just pulled away. I mean, in game 3, Luka made a stupid foul. You know, you have 5 fouls. You're one away from fouling out. 3 minutes left in the game. You can't try and take a charge at the 3-point line. You know, it's a real 50-50 play. Maybe you draw the charge on Jaylen Brown, you get the ball back. But more often than not, they're going to give that play to the offense. You know, they're going to give the ball back to the offense and call a blocking foul. And that's exactly what happened. Luka ends up fouling out. And the Mavericks already in a tough spot, down a few points with a few minutes left to go. Now you're missing the best player that you have in the entire series. You know, you're missing one of the best players in the world. Without Luka on the floor, it was just an impossible task at that point for the Mavericks to have any chance of beating Boston in game 3. And now you're going back to Boston, to TD Garden, where the fans are going to be electric. I don't know. It's one of those situations where, you know, the Mavericks could make history. Should they win tomorrow night in Boston, I'm ready to have a discussion on whether or not this is possible. But right now, this is the Celtics series to lose. You know, you're up 3-0. All you got to do is win one of your next 4. Realistically, Boston should have this series in the bag. But we also saw last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Celtics were almost the first team to come back from down 3-0 as they pushed the Eastern Conference Finals against the Miami Heat all the way to 7 games after being down 3-0 in that one. So it's definitely possible. And we've seen it in other sports, you know, in the NHL, we've seen it a few times. Once in baseball, we don't have to get into who in baseball did it, but it's just simply one of the hardest tasks, I think, in sports to come back down 3-0. It's, you know, near impossible. especially against a team as dominant as the Boston Celtics. And are you really going to be able to hold the Boston Celtics to 36% shooting as a team again? Are you going to get the same output from guys like PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford, and Derek Lively? You know, Kyrie and Luka have to show up, but if the other guys surrounding them can't show up as well, I'm not too sure. Not too sure. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night, 8:30 on ABC. Will the Mavericks continue this potential Cinderella run in the finals, or will Boston hang up their NBA leading 18th championship banner? We'll have to wait and see. Continuing with the basketball here, the WNBA has a few games going on today, starting at noon. The Indiana Fever hosts the Chicago Sky for the first time since, well, as many of us remember, it was Chinedu Carter with a hard elbow to the back of Caitlin Clark that caused a lot of uproar amongst, you know, sports watchers and everybody on Twitter and Instagram, wherever. There was a lot of discussion about what's going on with, you know, the way that these players are treating Caitlin Clark in the league so far. Sure, she's a rookie. She's also one of the most highly touted rookies that has ever come into the league. So what's going on with Caitlin? Not sure, but that game is coming up in just a half an hour. Right as this show here will be ending, you can tune into CBS and see the Indiana Fever take on the Chicago Sky as two of the top rookies in this WNBA class, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, will square off again for the first time since the Fever beat the Sky in Chicago with a score of 71-70. So that should be a great matchup. Coming up later today at 3 o'clock, the Seattle Storm will take on the Phoenix Mercury. And at 3, the LA Sparks take on the Atlanta Dream. So a few great matchups here in the WNBA, as we will have to tune in and see what goes on there. Coming up next, we will do what we do every week, where we dive into the hottest headlines in the world of sports and beyond, and we'll open up the phone lines again. You know, feel free to call in 518-476-1045. If you got a hot take or a reaction to one of the stories that we're talking about, let us know, and we'll continue to discuss. Coming up next, here on the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Hey, this is Vinny Fredericks from the Hot Seat. To stay up to date with when episodes are going to be posted or airing live every Sunday morning at 11, be sure to check out at VFreds Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. That's VFREDDS Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, where we'll have clips, updates, and more for you. Up next, more of the Hot Seat. And we are back here on the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Before we get into the hottest headlines of the week, the hottest story I just heard as I was checking my phone during that last commercial break, the fellas over at the Sakati Center in the men's league, my boys got their first win of the season today as Usama Siddiqui hit a game-winning three from the logo near half court. So quick round of applause for them, you know.
Wow.
You know, good stuff. That's what we like to hear. You know, I'm pretty sure that after that game-winning shot from the logo went in, they were hearing in their heads.
Pulls up, three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Wins the game at the buzzer!
Usama Siddiqui with the game winner right around the buzzer. Good stuff, fellas. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear you boys are having fun. All right, let's move on to our hottest headlines of the week, as we do every week here on the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks. And starting things off with a bit of somber news, Charles Barkley says he is going to retire from TV after the 2024-2025 NBA season.
That's terrible.
One more time.
That's terrible.
We'll miss you, Chuck. Truly one of the most entertaining TV personalities on Inside the NBA. And with everything going on, you know, with TV rights and, you know, not sure who's going to get the NBA games next after next season. Well, Charles Barkley said, I ain't going nowhere other than TNT. So we'll miss you, Chuck. Inside the NBA was always one of our favorite shows, one of the most entertaining series that you can see as not even just a sports fan, just in general. and we'll definitely miss his personality on the, our televisions. Moving on, Edmonton Oilers took down the Florida Panthers as they, just like the Dallas Mavericks, continue their season and try to make a Cinderella story out of the NHL Stanley Cup. They took down Florida with a score of 8-1, one of the highest scoring games in Stanley Cup history. Connor McDavid had himself a goal. Stuart Skinner was phenomenal, making 32 saves for the Oilers. And well, it's just one, according to McDavid. That's all it is. Whether you score 8 or you score 1, it's just one win. We've got to go to Florida and do a job and drag them back to Alberta. So pretty similar situations here amongst the NBA Finals and the NHL Stanley Cup. You see a team win a big one at home, continuing the series down 3-0. Now they got to go on the road, try to get another win in their opponent's home turf, and hopefully continue the series and continue their season. So good stuff from the Edmonton Oilers. I know Dave Portnoy, who has a big futures bet on Edmonton winning the Stanley Cup, I'm sure he was glad to see that his bet is still alive. LA Lakers planning to interview J.J. Redick for head coaching job. As we saw just last week, Dan Hurley turned down the Lakers deal of, I want to say, 6 years, $70 million, somewhere in that range. Decides to stay at UConn for another season and try to chase history, as he could become the first coach to win 3 straight national championships in NCAA basketball history. So the Lakers pivot, and they move on to J.J. Redick, who, as we all know, is good friends with LeBron James. We see they have, you know, their podcast together. They've known each other for a number of years. And this is a real intriguing story because J.J. Redick has never coached an NBA team in his life, but he's one of those personalities that knows basketball very well. You know, he would be a real player's coach, I'd like to think. And sure, most of the time, rookie head coaches don't seem to get it done in the NBA. He could be one that, you know, takes this team to the next level because he is just that smart when it comes to basketball and how the game should be played. And anybody out there that thinks LeBron James isn't going to have a part in this decision?
Stop the cap.
All right, stop the cap. We know LeBron James is in. Whoever is making this final decision, whether it's Genie, whether it's, you know, whoever, LeBron James is in their ear telling them he wants J.J. Redick as the head coach. We know that they're good friends. We know they get along well. And we know that they can bounce ideas off each other. So I wouldn't be surprised to see J.J. Redick as the next head coach for the L.A. Lakers because, well, when you have LeBron James on your team, you got to do whatever you can to keep him happy. That is how you win games in the NBA. Keep LeBron James on your team and keep him happy. You'll have a chance in the playoffs for sure. Moving on to the gridiron here, as we reported last week that the Atlanta Falcons and the Philadelphia Eagles were being investigated for tampering after their offseason acquisitions of the Falcons getting Kirk Cousins and the Eagles getting running back Saquon Barkley. The Atlanta Falcons were docked a fifth-round pick in the 2025 draft and fined $250,000 for violating the NFL's anti-tampering policy related to free agent signings. While the league did clear the Philadelphia Eagles of tampering with Saquon Barkley, the tampering violations for the Falcons were a result of improper contact with 3 players prior to their official unrestricted free agency period: quarterback Kirk Cousins, wide receiver Darnell Mooney, and tight end Charlie Werner. In addition to the team penalties, the NFL fined Falcons general manager Terry Fontenot $50,000. Was it really worth it? If you were going to go out and draft Michael Penix at number 8 anyway, was it worth losing a future fifth round pick and getting fined $250,000 to get Kirk Cousins, who you might only start for half a season at most? I don't know. Interesting stuff there. And the Falcons, I just don't know what they're doing. You know, they had one of the worst pass rushes in the league last year. They just went out and signed a quarterback who, you know, is coming off a torn Achilles, is getting up there in age, but you signed him to a 4-year deal. You expected him to play, and then you go out and draft his replacement at number 8 when you could have gotten the best pass rusher in the draft at that point. It was all offense at that point still. You could have gotten the best defensive player on the board, and instead you go Michael Penix, who was a great player nonetheless, great quarterback, but it's just a real head scratcher if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan. Moving on, the Jacksonville Jaguars agreed to a 5-year, $275 million extension with quarterback Trevor Lawrence. This contract includes $200 million guaranteed and $142 million at signing. Lawrence received a $37.5 million signing bonus in a deal that starts in 2026, meaning he's going to be under contract with the Jaguars through 2030. With this 5-year extension, the vision we had when we selected Trevor first overall in 2021 has become a reality, as Jaguars general manager Trent Baalke went on to say, "Our objectives have always been aligned as an organization. We have consistently messaged the importance of extending our core players, and Trevor is a foundational talent that we will continue to build around in our quest for a championship." So this $55 million average salary in Trevor Lawrence's deal ties him with Bengals Joe Burrow for the highest average salary amongst quarterbacks in the NFL. And with a lot of other quarterbacks out there, you know, especially Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott.
Yeah! Here we go!
Well, he's sitting up there with his feet raised high, and he's wondering, hey, where's my extension? You know, this is what happens in the NFL. The same thing with Justin Jefferson when he got his big extension. All these other wide receivers that have been waiting for their deals are kicking their feet up saying, well, hey, this guy got this. I'm better than him. You know, why shouldn't I be getting paid the same? Or, you know, he got that. Why am I not around that same range? The NFL, when it comes to contract extensions, it can get messy. You see a lot of players sitting out. Like just recently, Alvin Kamara of the New Orleans Saints decided he's going to sit out as he looks for a new deal in his contract. That's just the way that the NFL goes in the offseason. And speaking of players in the NFL and their contract extensions, Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins signs his franchise tender. So he will be signed with the Bengals for this upcoming season, as he, I'm sure, wanted to get a bigger extension, but he signed his franchise tag just yesterday. And by signing the tag, the fifth-year wide receiver is expected to show up at training camp. Earlier in the week, quarterback Joe Burrow said he remained in contact with Higgins since the end of last season and welcomed the idea of throwing with him before training camp begins in late July. T and I are always talking, said Burrow. Said, I've seen T several times this offseason. He looks great. Whenever he's ready to come back, I'll be excited to see him. So Higgins is set to earn $21.8 million this season under the tag, and he and the Bengals can still negotiate a long-term deal until July 15th. We'll see what happens with T. Higgins. Do the Bengals trade him this season? Do they try to hold on to him and make a run at the Super Bowl this year and let him walk in free agency? A lot of unanswered questions from the second-round pick out of Clemson in 2020. In his first four seasons, Higgins has totaled 3,000-plus receiving yards and 24 touchdowns and has been one of the real, you know, pieces of that Bengals offense on the opposite side of Ja'Marr Chase, Tyler Boyd out there, Joe Mixon in the backfield. This Bengals offense has a lot of stars, and when you got a lot of stars on your team, it can be tough to pay all of them and keep them all on the roster. Coming up next, we'll dive into, speaking of signings, has your team had one of the worst MLB signings in recent years? With Jose Abreu getting DFA'd by the Houston Astros and now released, he goes down as one of the worst MLB signings in recent history. Is your team also on that list? Find out next when we return to the hot seat with Vinny Fredericks here on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Vinny Fredericks from the hot seat here, not to promote anything or sell anything to you, but simply to say thank you. To all the listeners out there, your support is very much appreciated. And here at the hot seat, we will do our best to continue providing you with the hottest takes, the hottest topics, and the hottest headlines around the world of sports on a weekly basis. Thank you again for listening. It's much appreciated. And we've got more of the hot seat coming up for you right after this. Let's make some noise here for this final segment of the Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. As I had to throw a little Pitbull in there, excited to see him ass back later on in September. That should be a good one. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, I highly recommend it. That's going to be, I'd say, the concert of the summer. So let's dive in here as the Houston Astros had pretty much no choice. They had to release Jose Abreu after an abysmal start to the season, signing him to a $30 million a year contract. Abreu was just hitting 124 in 35 games this season, and the Astros gave the former MVP 120 plate appearances to see if he had anything left in the tank, and shocker, he didn't. Given the Astros are 6 games under 500 and their offense is just 7th in the American League in runs, they couldn't wait any longer. If they want any chance of turning things around and trying to make the playoffs this season, they had to make a change. It's a tough ending for Abreu, who was the American League MVP back in 2020 and a 2-time RBI champ. You know, it's not overstating things to suggest that Abreu, who was 27 years old when he signed with the White Sox in 2014, could have been a potential Hall of Famer if he had just gotten there a little bit sooner. You know, joining the MLB at 27, you still have a few years left of your prime, but you're really missing out on great years in your early 20s where you can really make an impact. And once you reach a certain age, it just gets tough to get the bat around quick enough to get good swings on the ball. So one of, you know, the better players in MLB history, probably won't go down as a Hall of Famer, but had some great years with the Chicago White Sox. Unfortunately, couldn't get enough done to stick with the Houston Astros. So let's see what some of the other worst signings in recent years in the MLB are, and if your team is unfortunately on this list. As first off, Javier Baez, the Detroit Tigers. 6-year deal, $140 million from 2022 to 2027 he is signed until. Former World Series champion Javier Baez. We've all seen the poor swings floating around on Twitter, you know, whenever he chases one in the opposite batter's box. Yeah, Javier Baez, not a great signing for the Tigers. At the time, you know, might have been a good pickup, but he just simply fell off the face of the earth when it comes to hitting the ball. I mean, he used to be a great hitter when he was in Chicago, but something along the lines, whether it's his approach to the plate or what, he has just not been able to get good swings on the ball in quite some time. So yeah, one of the worst ones, that's definitely up there. Andrew Benintendi, Chicago White Sox, just signed last year to a 5-year, $75 million deal through 2023 to 2027. Benintendi signed coming off a season where he hit 304 in 2022, but also just hit 5 home runs. And at 28 years old, that's a plus going into free agency. You know, he's still got a few years left. He could definitely make an impact, but since then, he has not been the same player. You know, he posted just an 88 OPS plus last season, and he's been hitting even worse so far this year, hitting 204 for a batting average. Lines sitting at 204, 245, 296 slashes, and his defensive run saved metrics is also terrible at -9, leading to a major league worst wins above replacement stat, which basically calculates how many wins the team would get if they had someone else in there, or how many wins they would get having him in the lineup compared to somebody else. And he is at a -2. For reference, Jose Abreu is sitting at a -1.6 WAR. So realistically, the White Sox are in better position to get wins without him in the lineup. But when you're paying him that kind of money, you kind of have no choice but to play him. Moving on, Chris Bryant and the Colorado Rockies, another recent one. 2022 to 2028, he is signed for 7 years, $182 million. Former NL MVP, another former World Series champion like Javi Baez with the Chicago Cubs in 2016. Yeah, he has simply not been the same since probably 2017, 2018. He had knee and shoulder and back and wrist issues, and you know, he was turning 30 years old when he got signed by the Colorado Rockies. You know, I mean, what else could have gone wrong? You know, everything that you could have seen go wrong went wrong. He's had many different stints on the injured list. He's hit just 186 in the 24 games he's played this year. And he's just simply has not been the player that the Colorado Rockies expected to sign in the former MVP. Xander Bogaerts, San Diego Padres, just last year signed an 11-year, $280 million contract, signing him from 2023 till 2033. What did you expect? You signed a 31-year-old to an 11-year contract. Really? What did you expect, San Diego? Sure, he's a great contact hitter. You know, he'll get base hits here and there. But 31 years old and you're signing him to an 11-year deal? Just ridiculous. I'm not even surprised. That should be number one. But really, number one is this one right here. Anthony Rendon and the Los Angeles Angels, who was signed in 2020 to a 7-year, $245 million deal. And he doesn't even want to play baseball anymore. Rendon was 30 years old and coming off a pretty big 2019 season. He was third in MVP voting with the Nationals and won a World Series that year with them. And the Angels figured, hey, we've got Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Let's throw Anthony Rendon in on this mix. And Anthony Rendon has since played 167 games just since 2021 and has hit just .239. This season has only played 19 games and is currently on the 60-day injured list with a hamstring tear. And the Angels will still owe Rendon $76 million for the 25 and 26 seasons, with just a 3.6 win above replacements earned in the first five seasons. So yeah, I would say Anthony Rendon has a chance to go down as one of the worst signings in history. All right, that'll put the wraps here on today's episode of The Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks. No episode next week, as I'll be celebrating my 23rd birthday next Sunday. So taking a little time off, but we'll be back the following week with more of the hottest takes and the hottest topics for you. And that'll do it for me today. Everybody be safe out there. And if you haven't yet, like I said at the start of the show, be sure to wish your father a happy Father's Day. Give him a call, give him a hug, and everybody stay safe out there. We'll see you next time on The Hot Seat with Vinny Fredericks on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio.